Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, back with The Takeaway. Changemaker, artist, abolitionist. These three words describe my next guest, Patrice Cullors. While Patrice is one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, she's also an educator and author looking to help the next generation. In her new book, An Abolitionist Handbook, 12 Steps to Changing Yourself and the World, Patrice provides a roadmap for those looking to add abolitionist theories to their lives. I asked Patrice to tell me how this book is different from her memoir.
This book is a different type of intervention. It's challenging how we understand the police and prison system, but more importantly, Melissa, it's really challenging how we understand our relationships to each other. We come from a culture of punishment, and I'm really calling for us to dig in into a culture of care.
It's also maybe even just a different way of thinking about what an audience is, what a book is, what the goal of writing is, which are all pretty sort of big concepts out there. But you start by saying, this is not a book for your bookshelf. And although it hurt my soul, this is not a book for your syllabus, for a sort of single semester. But this is a book for you to like carry around and dog ear and actually use. And it's organized as 12 steps, a pretty different way of thinking about 12 steps. But talk to us about that decision to write a practical handbook for folk.
Well, I started writing it pre-pandemic, pre-uprisings. I really was interested and have been interested for almost, two decades now. Our relationship, America's relationship to the prison system, but also really interested about how we've really created a culture that relies on vengeance and punishment as a form of accountability. And not just sort of in a larger world, but also inside of our movement spaces, how we treat each other. I've met, so many different movement elders who says there was, two parts around how our movements got destroyed. One, obviously the government, CIA and FBI, but also internal conflict, how we showed up or didn't show up for each other, what we believed or we didn't believe. And so this is also a really deep challenge to building a new world. How do we build a new world? I know that I want to get rid of police and prisons all day, every day. But once I get rid of those systems, what's left? We have each other. And if we're still treating each other poorly, if we're still treating each other like the cops treated us, then we'll have the very same system.
All right, so let's walk through it. Let's start with the word abolition and abolitionist. I think it's still a word that for so many evokes like, a seventh grade textbook and, aren't abolitionists, some really nice white Northerners who lived, in the 1850s. So what is an abolitionist? Who is an abolitionist? What does it mean to align oneself with abolition?
Abolition does come from an anti-slavery movement and really the challenge against chattel slavery. And many of us know that slavery ended, except if you were committed of a crime. And so this is still a movement to end slavery. But right now in this modern day movement, it's really a movement to end the prison and police system as we currently understand it and know it. And being an abolitionist simply means you want to get rid of police and prisons, court systems and surveillance. But also being an abolitionist means that you want to imagine something new for this world. You want to imagine our families and communities having access to healthcare, having access to mental health care, having access to housing, jobs, green spaces. That also is abolition.
Yeah, so we could just walk through each of the 12, but I want to start a little bit in the middle because I find 4, 5, and 6 to be surprising in some ways, and not truly surprising once you start reading it, but surprising to have simply seen on the list. And so 4 is say yes to imagination. 5 is forgive actively, not passively. And 6 is allow yourself to feel. Now, you're not just like giving us some Z-gen like softy-offty here. Like, is this really a handbook for doing the work if you're feeling and thinking and imagining?
It is a deep opportunity, I believe, for us to transform how we are. Part of patriarchy, part of white supremacy is hardening who we are. When we don't feel, it means we can't feel the injustices around us. I was, you know, a child who was very emotional, as they said. But it wasn't that I was emotional, it was that I saw really terrible things happening around me and it impacted me. And I wanted to know that people also felt impacted by those things. And then from that impacted, we could do something else. We could take action. And so this handbook is both asking you to not just look at what's in front of you, not just looking at, you know, these systems outside of us, but how have we digested those systems? How have they impacted us personally? I'm so grateful for this generation, a generation that has talked about trauma and healing as something that is so important for us to look at. You know, one of the people who wrote the introduction of the handbook, Prentice Hemphill, who's the founder of the Embodiment Institute, really talks about feelings and how feelings are really important to map out our needs. And when we're able to map out our needs and our desires, we get closer to our freedom. And not just from this individualistic woo-woo place, but from this place of collectivity, this place of profound community.
And this is, of course, I mean, I think about her so often now, not that I didn't always, but perhaps even more now, that we've lost her. I mean, this was so central to Bell Hooks's work for so long, calling right. us to be, that if we were going to do this work, we couldn't be wounded warriors, that we had to address the wounds, not just the war.
Yes, and obviously you'll see so much of Bell Hooks' language in this book. She was the author and activist who I kept her books. I would call them Bible books. Sisters of the Yams. I read in high school. I would hold it in my backpack every single day and bust it out and read it to other people. This book is a part of that legacy. It's the legacy of Angela Davis, of Ruthie Wilson Gilmore, the legacy of Bell Hooks. I'm trying to lean into all the teachings and help build it around an abolitionist framework.
Talk to me a little bit about imagination.
This may be one of my favorite chapters, my favorite steps. It's because as a young person, especially when you grow up in poverty, especially when you grow up in a lot of despair, you spend a lot of time imagining a different world to live in. Imagination for children, and I argue adults, is such a critical practice and changing our conditions. And part of imagination, also for me, I believe that this system, this white supremacist, patriarchal capitalist system, has robbed us of our imagination. It makes us believe that what's in front of us is the only way. It's the only way, and it's been this way forever. But I don't agree with that. I think, you know, we have to imagine a new world for us to be able to live in a new world. And it starts with the imagination. It starts with us imagining something different.
Tell me about the creation of Crenshaw Dairy Mart.
Oh, you're asking me all the best questions.
Good. Oh, see, look, that's like, I feel like, oh, I just got a good grade. Yay.
I went to art school. Many people don't know that I'm an artist. And I say it all the time. I was an artist before I was politicized. And my art is kind of weird performance art, conceptual art. It's what I've been doing for so long. And I went back to school in 2017 and graduated in 2019. And from there met some amazing people, Ali Reza, Alexander Doris, and Noe Olivas, two of my cohort members, and we started the Crenshaw Dairy Mart, where we took an old dairy mart in Inglewood and a laundromat and converted it into an artist gallery and studio and community center and space. The Dairy Mart has been a place of play and practice, and we are doing incredible work right now. I'm excited that we've been able to launch multiple food drives at the Dairy Mart, especially during this pandemic. But also, we've been developing what we're calling abolitionist pods. They're self-sustaining food pods where we work with Black farmers here in Los Angeles County and build a geometric dome that fits up to 2,000 plants and vegetables to feed the neighboring community. And the most recent pod right now is actually up at a transitional housing village in downtown Los Angeles, right across from the jails, Men's Central Jail, which is one of the first places I started to organize when I stopped to, alongside many Angelenos, to stop the building of the $3.5 billion jail plan here in Los Angeles.
You know, whenever I speak with you and I don't think I've remembered from the memoir that as a child you were, as you just described it, emotional. So let me ask one, and then I'll go further here. But are you an empath? Like, do you feel like you experience the pain, the agony of others who are also in pain?
Yes, I do. Actually, was doing an interview with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now, and you know, I was listening to her talk about Leonard Peltier, and he wrote a letter, you know, for her to read on air. And he said, "Where are the human rights activists? You know, I am in hell." He just contracted COVID. And I, face full of makeup, just started crying and got, you know, I'm feeling it now, which is especially, I think, the suffering of people inside of human cages, given that that's what I experienced and witnessed my whole life, you know, from my brother to both my fathers, to many of my siblings, to friends of mine, visiting jail cells, visiting prisons, and seeing the toll it takes on both the human being inside the cage, but also the human beings around those people, around the people who are inside those cages.
I ask that in part because, you know, often you pop up in my social media timeline because you've done some wonderful thing, some great moment has happened. But painfully, the reality is also you pop up in my social media timeline often when you are just under attack, when some person or group or organized effort has decided that on this day they are coming for you. And it is brutal enough to watch and to experience, but also knowing that empathic and emotional aspect of who you are, that artistic and creative and imaginative. I'm asking a little bit here because I do feel like we're all supposed to score points on social media and have the like funniest comeback, but I guess I'm wondering a bit like how you feel when that is happening.
Scared, you know, as you know, and you witnessed last year, the heavy scrutiny I was under from what felt like everybody, felt like nothing I could do was right. And as you also know, as a Black woman, sort of what keeps us up is wanting to please everybody, wanting to be right, wanting to take care of everybody. And it felt like last year was a big moment of feeling like a big failure, but also it was an opportunity for me to remind myself that my worth isn't tied to my work, and that actually I'm a worthy human being just for being alive and breathing. And that has taken a lot of work. It's taken a lot of work for me to believe that. I was the child who, you know, I was friends with everybody. And if someone wasn't my friend, I would make it my job for have them to be my friend. And you can't do that when you're a public figure, when millions of people are watching you literally. And also when, you know, the right wing decides to stage an attack against you to tell lies about you, at that point, you're not actually a human being anymore. I was a symbol. And that has been a really, it's been illuminating, Melissa. It's been an illuminating moment for me to sit back and watch, you know, what legacy I'm a part of. How many movement leaders historically were praised and then tore down, praised again and then tore down. It's hard not to take that personally. And now, you know, almost 8 months out, I am a different person. I've been changed. And my hope and my prayer and my desire is that I keep doing the best work I could possibly do so that I can help change the material conditions for the people most impacted by this system.
It is, it's one thing to love the people in theory. I love the people in theory. But like, if you actually meet the people, it can be pretty hard to meet like the people and love the actual people, like not the ones in theory, but the people in practice. So how do we do that as part of this abolitionist work? How do we not just love the people in theory, but love the actual flawed, messed up, sometimes mean as hell persons who we are in practice with and in movement with?
Beautiful, beautiful question. One, this is going to sound so trite, but I have to say it. We have to love ourselves first. I don't think last year I loved myself. I think I relied on the love of the people. And when you lose the love of the people, then who do you have? I truly believe, especially as Black people, everything that we have faced and have endured and have lived through, that our love for ourselves is a revolutionary act. Audre Lorde said it best. And so loving ourselves first is so, so, so important. And then that extension of love for ourselves will extend for our people. I think I love our people more on the other side of what I've been through because I see how much pain we're in, how much we're hurting, how much we need, and how easy it is for us to turn on each other because we've been turned on for so many centuries.
We're doing a series here on the takeaway for our Black History Month. We didn't want to do like McDonald's Black History Month facts. Like, God bless them. Garrett Morgan designed the streetlight. But our focus here is what we're calling Black Queer Rising. Thinking both about the kind of movement work that you are engaged with, but also about what it means to rise in joy and self-love and love for the people. And so since we're going to engage this interview both around the new book and also around Black Queer Rising, I'm wondering if specifically, as you're thinking about Black folks who are living at the intersections of multiple identities of that are so frequently devalued and degraded, how you might talk about rising love and where else in that handbook you might focus folks who are living in those intersections.
From going to helping build a global movement to now, you know, coming back home and really centering in Los Angeles, I'll say this, who is around us, who our community is so important. I have a whole chapter in this book on build your community and value your interpersonal relationships. Those are the relationships that saved me this last year. I think a lot about how many Black women are hurting, how many of us suffer from depression, suicidal thoughts, how many of us are struggling on a daily basis. And oftentimes, because we're so lonely, we don't have people checking up on us because we're the person, you know, we're the people that check on everybody else. And so build your community, build your team, call on them. I can't tell you how many times I've just called people to cry. I did it earlier today. It is so important that we have that space, especially those of us at the margins, queer, woman, Black, raised working class. It is so important that we have those spaces where we just get to feel, be loved, be in our joy. I went on a hike the other day with friends. It's my favorite time to be in nature. So what whatever makes you feel connected to yourself, makes you feel connected to your family and your community, do that because it matters most in the end.
Patrice Cullors. Y'all, you got to check out An Abolitionist Handbook. It is a practical guide. It is a bit of a love letter. It's a worksheet. It's got work. You have work to do as part of it. You got to read it with some other folks and do your guiding questions. Patrice, thank you so much for the book. And thank you for joining us here on The Takeaway.
This was excellent. Thank you.